This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Committee on the Judiciary will come to order with the Secretary to take the roll.
Senators Gillespie,
here.
Heidekrim, Smith, Herbeck Berry,
here.
Valley,
here.
Teason,
here.
Abdallah.
Here. We have a quorum. The chair will entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Second.
There's a motion and second to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are approved. I just want to remind myself to turn off your cell phones, please, or you'll have to buy donuts. And if you're here to testify, please register at the desk by the door. Today, I think because we have people here that are that travel quite a way, Dr. Randall and others, we'll drop down to Senate Bill 74. Direct the Office of the Attorney General to study the creation of a state medical examiner system and to provide an appropriation, therefore. Are there proponents of Senate Bill 74? Proponents. Dr. Randall, please come up. Proceed.
Insurance companies look for coroner reports. It doesn't exist by statute or by administrative rule. It would be nice if there was someone overseeing, but it again, who's to do that? How are they to do that? Are thorny questions that deserve study. And then the last component is the autopsy component. We have, since statehood, delegated that to the private sector. We've outsourced the autopsy. And it really has worked reasonably well as long as there has been a private contractor out there to do it. That, I think, is about to come to an end. There is no significant remuneration for doing autopsy. Pathologists in the state have no particular interest in doing autopsies, particularly in a forensic setting. What it means is that when I retire from the forensic arena next year, 2010, there will be no one available to do autopsies on a private contractual basis. It's a little bit like a county or a municipality doing snow removal on a contractual basis, and then all of a sudden the contractor says, "No, I don't want to do it anymore." And now who's gonna do that service? But again, how are you going to structure that? Are you going to have a state medical examiner that oversees the separate coroners? Are you going to have North Dakota model where someone just sits in the state capitol and hopes people send some cases? Those are difficult issues. What sort of facility are you going to build for that particular individual? Where are you going to put it? There is no off-the-shelf turnkey state medical examiner program out there that you can say, okay, let's plug it into South Dakota and we'll make the system work. It's a difficult issue that I think deserves a thorough study before we would ever think of bringing something back to the legislature for implementation.
There any questions for Dr. Randall? Thunder Valley.
Just a quick one. Thank you for coming, Dr. Randall. Other states, you kind of touched on them. Rural states that probably don't have the larger number of cases that you have that would be of concern as if I was, if we were talking about Chicago or New York. Other states that are in our particular predicament, what are they doing?
Well, we run the gamut, and I don't know if New Mexico kind of fits between the big and the little state. New Mexico has a Cadillac of systems with a state medical examiner and then regional death investigators that are hired by the state medical examiner. The opposite side would be, as I mentioned, North Dakota, that funds the state medical examiner but has no influence or role in local death investigation and just hopes that the county coroner send cases into the state medical examiner, who is just doing nothing more than just doing autopsies. Iowa is a little more proactive with the state medical examiner, but again, without direct control over local death investigation. All of those are states, with the exception of New Mexico, where there was a system and they tried to cobble something better on top of what already existed. We may be in a situation where we can just start fresh and not be bound by what we've been doing in the past.
Other questions? Doctor, what's presently done on the 9 reservations in South Dakota?
Currently, the reservations also work on a contractual basis with myself and Dr. Hobby in Rapid City. I don't foresee that would ever change.
No.
If there was a state medical examiner, then I suspect, again, like New Mexico, that they would contract with the state medical examiner to do their autopsy.
Thank you. Further questions? Any questions, Dr. Randall? thank you for taking your time and traveling up here. And if you got a few minutes, we'd appreciate it if you stand by if something comes up. Other proponents of Senate Bill 74, proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Miller. I want to make sure that the committee of directors are in support of this.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Miller? Thank you. Other proponents, Senate Bill 74. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Ken McFarland, and I'm the administrative assistant to the Minnehaha County Commission. We are highly interested in this particular bill. We've had the good fortune of having Dr. Randall's services both as a county coroner and being able to access his services as a forensic pathologist for a number of years. And we are quite concerned about how the impact of Dr. Randall's pending retirement would fit into the myriad of things that counties are responsible for in the area of prosecution, defense, and utilizing the services of the forensic pathologist. We just feel that at this juncture with his retirement and the myriad of issues that I think that we're going to be facing with his retirement, but also other counties in the state, other jurisdictions in the state, that this is a good time for South Dakota to step back and take a look at the whole system and to see if there's anything that can be improved and what we can do better to have a more coordinated system. And so with that, we would urge your approval of Senate Bill 74.
Thank you, Mr. McFarland. Any questions for Mr. McFarland? Any questions? Thank you. Other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Pankratz, a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Association of County Commissioners. And we're here in support of Senate Bill 74 today. I mean, you've heard, I think, the reasons why it makes sense. Just on a personal note, I would like to say that it's nice to see Dr. Randall in another life that I had. We had the opportunity to do some of those things that he has expertise and experience in. And if you haven't had the chance to be involved in those things, as Senator Teason also had an excellent forensic pathologist a number of years back, Tom Henry, did some of those same things. And it really is, as Mr. McFarland said, I think a concept for our state whose time has come. And so we would hope that you would be able to support it and eventually find the funding for that. And so I'd stand by for questions. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Pankratz? Thank you. Other proponents? Good morning, Mr. Swear.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Scott Swear on behalf of Attorney General Long this morning. The Attorney General thinks this is an important issue. It needs to be addressed in South Dakota. As the bill says, the Attorney General is willing to lead this study because he does think it's an incredibly important issue, and we would ask for the committee's support to move this forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents, Senate Bill 74. Oh, just a minute, Scott. Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you identify what costs, out-of-pocket costs, the Attorney General would incur in doing this study?
Okay. Go ahead.
At this time, I think we're obviously looking at doing the study. What the study entails, obviously we don't know yet. We have somewhat of an outline, but until we bring the parties together to determine what in fact we need to do to make this a good, reliable study for the legislature, I think it's a little too early to say what those costs would be. I would say that we are the smallest Attorney General's office in the United States. And we have an extremely busy office. We have an extremely thin budget, and we are willing to undertake this study because we do think it's important. And we think the $15,000 to simply go through with the study is fair. But again, until we bring the stakeholders together, I think it's difficult to say how exactly that money will be spent.
Go ahead.
I guess I'm just wondering if the Attorney General thinks this is important enough that he might be willing to take this on without the fight over $15,000.
I think when you look at this, it's an issue that affects the counties and the states immensely. And I think that, again, when you look at the Attorney General's budget, when you see the many charges that we have, both statutorily and otherwise, and of course with the budget constraints this year in our office, we simply think that the $15,000 is fair to undertake what will be a study that assists almost every governmental entity in South Dakota. So we do think to move forward with this study that particular piece of the legislation is important.
Senator Turbeck Berry.
Maybe this is just coming at the same question a little bit differently, but it strikes me, Scott, that at least in my opinion, unquestionably, the Attorney General could have conducted this study without statutory authority just on its own to figure out what recommendation it might make. Is the reason that we have a bill here simply because it's a budget matter, either $15,000 or the study doesn't get done? Or otherwise, why hasn't it been done in the past?
Well, as this committee remembers, this bill was in front of you last year. It was Senate Bill 175, and Senator Abdallah was one of these, was the prime sponsor. Senator Heideperm was one of the sponsors of the bill. And we said last year that, again, we think it's important, but we really did not think, based on our budgetary constraints, that we could undertake yet another issue on our plate financially without this money. So, yes, we could go ahead and do the study. The study obviously wasn't done last year because we didn't have the appropriation given to us. I would say it's safe to say that if the appropriation is not given to us again this year, that I think it's questionable whether we will undertake the study. But obviously, if we are given this appropriation, the study will move forward, and by this time next year, the legislature will have a good handle on whether, in fact, this is a good thing for South Dakota. So I think with the importance of it, the importance of the issue, the $15,000 is fair, and yes, we think that that is necessary to move the study forward.
Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Swear. Just a side note here, we have a special guest in the audience this morning, a former state senator and former member of the Judiciary Committee, Roberta Rasmussen. Welcome. Welcome. I'm sure that you're a little nervous the way we do it now, but... we do too. Are there other proponents of Senate Bill 74? Proponents? Seeing none. Are there opponents of Senate Bill 74? Opponents? I can't believe there's one. He's not excited to be here, is he?
Okay. This is my first time in front of any committee, so I please hope I don't stumble through this too bad. This morning we've heard valid testimony on Senate Bill 74, and I understand that $15,000 is a very small amount of money. However, the governor has recently had to make very difficult decisions and recommendations, eliminating very good programs and the possibility of some South Dakotans even losing their jobs. Any discretionary expenditure cannot be recommended at this time. Just given the current fiscal condition, general fund expenditures should be limited and tailored to meet only the necessary needs of the South Dakota taxpayer. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I respectfully ask for your opposition to Senate Bill 74.
Any questions? You know, this is your first time, and then they throw you to the wolves?
Exactly. I know. I'm a little bit nervous up here today.
Senator, Mr. Beckford.
Nobody warned you about any particular members of the Judiciary Committee, did they?
Of course not, Senator.
Further questions? Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Other opponents? Other opponents? Seeing none. The public hearing on Senate Bill 74 is closed for committee discussion and or action. And I would only add that what Senator, or what Dr. Randall, part of his testimony back in the old age, in the 100 years ago, I spent 8 years in the sheriff's office and dealt with coroners, funeral home directors, and deputy sheriffs that were coroners. And one particular incident comes to mind. I remember one coroner in the funeral home that responded, and back in those days, most of the funeral homes furnished the ambulances. And I was at an accident scene where there was two funeral home ambulances there. One happened to be the coroner's ambulance. He was pulling bodies out of the other one, out of the other ambulance, to take them so he could get the funeral. And that's how bad it's been, and that's how bad it gets. And we get no uniformity. We get untrained people, and I'm not slamming the coroners. But some of them are not trained. None of them are doctors that I'm aware of, other than Dr. Randall and the one in Rep City. And with this bill, with this study, and if we get a statewide medical examiner, we're going to get uniformity. I think right down to where people are going to get closure on relatives and friends that are killed because there's going to be a professional investigating it, and that is not the case now. They have to request a medical examiner. I think it's a cost factor. I think in the long run it'll save money for the state and the counties, and I urge this body to pass it. Senator Terbeck-Berry.
I just want to comment briefly that I think South Dakota has been extraordinarily fortunate to have Dr. Brad Randall practice medicine in this state. I too have had the pleasure of working with him in a professional capacity, and by the nature of his work, typically in those instances when they are the most unfortunate of circumstances. But I think in many ways, at least in the east side of the state, people have thought we did have a state medical examiner. They thought it was Dr. Brad Randall, and whether he was, whatever capacity he was working in, he always was professional, and beyond that far, his competence and integrity were always unquestioned, and no matter whether he was on the same side of the case as I was or on the opposing, a witness for the opposing side, I always felt great comfort knowing that he was involved because you knew things got done right. I think he will be a tough act to follow.
Thank you. Senator Thiessen.
I feel compelled to put in a good word for Dr. Hobby, his counterpart in Rapid City. The all those comments apply directly to him as well. We have been lucky, and those guys have been responsive. You know, these kinds of incidents that require their work always happen on weekends and holidays, and so we have been fortunate. You know, in my 32 years in law enforcement, there's a series of things, you know, things that happen throughout your career. And you kind of put them on the list, and you say, there's something that's just waiting for a train wreck. You know, that it's not right. It's just ultimately it's going to go bad. And the situation with the coroners and lack of medical examiners has always been on my list. Now we in Rapid City, as in Sioux Falls, we've been fortunate. First of all, we have larger law enforcement agencies, and so we tend to have well-trained investigators in our law enforcement agencies, and so we get good on-scene investigations. No discredit to small agencies, but they don't have the manpower or the training available to get that kind of work done. And then we have the benefit of having a forensic pathologist nearby that is cooperative and helps us out. So I felt less concerned about our incident situation in the Rapid City Police Department, but was well aware of what Senator Abdullah talked about, and that is the conditions in outlying counties with very, very, very small police and sheriff's departments and lack of any coroner support to conduct thorough investigations. And I'm sure there's a good many cases in the last few decades that where criminal cases have gone unnoticed and death investigations or death certificates have reported the wrong causes for death. So I'm very pleased to see this come forward. I think we have to figure this out. There's going to be money involved in this, but counties are already paying in one way or another for various kinds of services. You know, an office of a medical examiner with professional people won't be cheap, but you know, that's maybe what our study will tell us and how we can set that up and how we can pay for it. I guess I do wish that the Attorney General would come in and say, you know, this is a very, very important deal. He knows it is because he's in the middle of many of these cases. I guess I'll tell him this personally, but I wished he would have come in and said, you know, I'm just going to make sure it gets, suck it up and make sure it gets done. But I am pleased that it's moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Very nice. Other remarks? Senator Heidebrin? Oh, excuse me. Senator Gillespie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an amendment. It's been distributed, 74RA. I would move it at this time.
Is there a second? We have a motion and a second, the 74RA amendment. And just on page 2, after line 7, the printed bill insert, whereas this act is necessary for the immediate preservation of public peace, health, and safety, an emergency is hereby declared to exist, and this act shall be in full force and effect from and after its passage and approval. Do you have any comments, Senator Gillespie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, committee members, I think it's important that we put the emergency clause on the bill. You know, without the emergency clause, things can't get rolling until July 1st, and sometimes with a November 1st deadline, that puts some pretty serious constraints on the individuals that are charged with making a report by November 1st. It's already a two-thirds vote with the appropriation, and I think that that we ought to allow things to get moving as soon as possible, considering the seriousness and statewide ramifications of the proposal.
Thank you. Other remarks? I think we're going to take a roll call vote on this. We have a motion and second on 74RA amendment. 74RA, those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie?
Aye.
Heidepram?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Rebecca Berry?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Thiessen?
Aye.
Abdallah?
Aye. 7-0. Senator Gillespie, do you have another amendment? Okay. Further remarks, further comments on Senate Bill 74 from the committee. Senator Heidepper moves to pass. Seconded by Senator Gillespie. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor of Senate Bill 74 signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will take the roll as amended.
Senators Gillespie?
Aye.
Heidepren?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Sherbeck Berry?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Thiessen?
Aye.
Abdallah?
Aye. 7-0. Senator Gillespie?
Title amendment.
Senator Gillespie moves the title amendment. Who seconded it? Thank you. This is the title change, and it's 74RTA. Senator Gillespie. No remarks. Any further remarks on this amendment? Those in favor of the, and then again, we're going to take a roll call on this. Those in those in favor of 74 RTA signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will take that roll.
Senators Gillespie,
aye.
Heideprin,
aye.
Smith,
aye.
Trabeck-Berry,
aye.
Valley,
aye.
Thiessen,
aye.
Abdallah,
aye. 7-0. What this bill will probably go to appropriations. It will go down to the appropriations, and we'll work from there. But at Senator Thiessen's recommendation, Scott, it's your job to get your office to come up with some money. And but Mr. McFarland, we discussed this before the meeting, and there's a chance that the counties can come up with some money and everybody else. I mean, we're not talking about a lot of money, but this is very important. So hopefully we'll work it out. And Dr. Randall, again, we want to thank you. Thank you for your service to the state. Unfortunately, I didn't get to work with you, but back then we had thank you. Now we'll go to House Bill 1085, revise certain provisions concerning magistrate judge jurisdictions. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Judith Roberts. I'm legal and legislative counsel for the UJS. I'm here on behalf of the Chief Justice.
Mr. Roberts, could you talk into the mic a little louder?
Yes. I'm here on behalf of the Chief Justice to testify on House Bill 1085. Excuse me. Mr. Chair, with your permission, may I take 1 minute for the new members of the committee just to explain how a Chief Justice bill gets before them? What happens with in the judicial branch is right after session, we encourage our judges, presiding judges, circuit judges, magistrate judges, to submit any ideas that they may have which would improve the process, make it more efficient. If they see anything in the code during the past year that needs housekeeping amendments or whatnot, we ask them to submit those ideas to my office for drafting and research. It comes to my office, and then in the fall judicial conference, when all the judges in the state are present for a meeting, this legislation is debated and amended and voted on. If it gets a majority of the votes, it becomes a Chief Justice bill, and then that's how it comes before you. I'm here today to testify on House Bill 1085, and this is one of those bills that a judge submitted because they saw a little bit of a glitch in the system. This is dealing with magistrate judges. Magistrate judges have jurisdiction in criminal matters when a fine doesn't exceed $2,000 or less. And in civil, they have jurisdiction over matters that are $12,000 or less. This deals with, if you look on the bottom of page 1, line 15, and then on page 2, lines 1 and 2, that is our amendment. It deals with overweight tickets. When trucks are overweight, they get penalties, civil penalties assessed as well. Depending on how many pounds they're overweight, those penalties are higher and higher, depending on, you know, whether it's 1,000 pounds overweight, and it goes all the way to more than 10,000 pounds overweight. The fines increase depending on how much they're overloaded. When an overweight ticket has a civil penalty in excess of $12,000, the magistrate judge loses jurisdiction over that matter. Now, it also has a criminal penalty. It's a Class 2 misdemeanor, and magistrate judges, a Class 2 misdemeanor. Magistrate judges have jurisdiction over Class 2 misdemeanors. So when the civil penalty exceeds what they can handle, either criminally or civilly, then it has to go into circuit court. Our judges feel that the magistrate judges should retain jurisdiction over a Class 2 misdemeanor overweight truck violation, and we don't want to transfer these tickets over to circuit court. It just clogs their docket and slows down the system when a magistrate judge is fully prepared and qualified to handle these Class 2 misdemeanor cases. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand by for questions, and I urge you to do pass on House Bill 1085. I'll stand by for questions.
Any questions? Senator Valley.
This is only going to be, because I looked that up, the 322255, this is only in the case of overweight trucks, and this is both for criminal and civil penalties. Is that correct? So that's the only jurisdiction we're talking about here, and it will cover both those.
Mr. Chair, Senator Valley, this is narrowly tailored to only address overweight vehicles. And since it's a Class 2 misdemeanor, but it does have accompanying penalties that do exceed their maximum that is placed upon them, it only addresses when those penalties get too high for a magistrate court, and it only deals with overweight trucks, nothing more. We're not extending their jurisdiction on anything else.
Any other questions? Thank you. Other proponents for House Bill 1085? Other proponents? Seeing none, any opponents? House Bill 1085. Opponents? Seeing none, the public testimony is closed and open for the committee to debate or action. Senator Valley.
I move to pass.
To pass. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Heideprim. Any discussion? Okay, the motion on the floor is do pass for House Bill 1085. Secretary can call the roll.
Senators Gillespie?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Sherbeck Berry?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Thiessen?
Aye.
Abdallah?
6-0.
Second.
Motion to second to consent calendar. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? On the consent calendar. Senator Abdallah, do you wish to?
No, go ahead.
It's been a vast improvement in the last few months.
It'll be a better improvement when one of the members gets kicked off the committee.
I have to grab my gavel.
You told me to be nice to you, and now you're taking off after me.
He's moving to House Bill 1087. Except when my computer comes up as 1088.
It's 1087 on the bill.
When I double click, it comes up to 1088.
It's just a simple housekeeping. You don't need
it. It's just a, you know. It doesn't make any difference. We'll pass 87 and 88.
Bill before the committee is House Bill 1087, an act to revise certain provisions concerning the number of peremptory challenges in cases involving very high felonies. Proponents for that bill.
Thank you, Senator. Committee, my name is Judith Roberts again, legal and legislative counsel for the Unified Judicial System. I'm here on behalf of the Chief Justice to testify on 1087. This is actually a very simple housekeeping bill. Apparently, It was overlooked in the past. I don't want to go into it too much. There's lawyers here on the committee that that know the different categories of felonies. You have Class A, B, and C, the most serious ones, and then Class 1, 2, 6 felonies, and they progressively get less serious. Basically, if you see the overstrike, Class 1 was left in with Class A and B, and then Class C was overlooked. So what we're just doing is putting Class C where it belongs, and then if you continue to read, Class 1 basically will be on line 6 in the category of all other felony cases. So it's just a housekeeping to clarify, putting them where they need to belong as far as challenges are concerned. I'll stand by for questions. I urge your due pass on this House Bill 1087.
Questions of the committee? Senator Gillespie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Roberts, can you reassure me that there are no instances that and I just thought of this, so forgive me, my question is going to be a little disjointed, but I'm concerned that there would be an instance where before the revision there were the 20 peremptories available that wouldn't be available. And I'm not talking about the instance where we're sweeping in the Class 1s, but in the revision that took place, adding the Class C felony. Now that we're changing Class 1, are there any Class 1s that prior to the revision had 20 and now will not have 20 by virtue of this change? Are you following me?
I think so. Senator Gillespie, basically Class C was included in this group because it falls in the middle of B and 1, so there's no problem there. If your question is going forward to from right now, will Class 1s get 20? No, they won't any longer get 20. But in the past, they have gotten 20, so it's a greater protection going forth from this time forward. It will be all other felonies, and they get 10. So I don't think there'll be any problem or challenge because they've been more protected in the past, and we were just going on from this point forth.
Senator Hatterbrin.
I'm sorry. I'm confused now. Class 1 felonies.
Mm-hmm.
Before this change, got 20 peremptory challenges. If you're defending a Class 1 felony, you have 20 peremptories. After this change, same crime, you would only have 10 peremptories.
Senator Hyerprim, yes, if you make this change, it'll be Class 1, which is 50 years imprisonment, where Class C, of course, as you know, life imprisonment. After this change, Class 1 will be like all other felony cases, because A, B, and C are the most serious. And then starting with Class 1, they go down in penalties. But yes, it will have, the prosecution will have 10, and the defense will have 10 each.
Yeah, but I guess my point is that while I certainly understand wanting to include Class C because it isn't mentioned,
mm-hmm.
when you delete Class 1 from the reference to 20 peremptory challenges, I'm on trial for 50 years, and all of a sudden I only have 10 peremptories instead of 20 before. And so that is a material change to anyone charged with a Class 1 felony.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Senator Hyderpren, if you want to amend that, you know, that is not our attempt. Right now we just want to make it very, very clear that Class C is included in this group. That is what was causing the judge's problems. I'll leave it up to this body to decide where you want the other ones to fall. We don't have a position on that.
Thank you. Senator Gillespie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Ms. Roberts, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but there were no discussions then about leaving the Class 1 in and just adding the Class C. There really weren't any discussions about that, and you don't have any opinion about that at this point?
Senator Gillespie, there was discussion as far as ensuring that the Class C get included to clear up that language. It was thought that the judges did not have a problem with putting Class 1 felonies in the phrase all other felony cases. There was some discussion on that. They did not have a problem with that.
Other questions for the witness? Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there other proponents for 1087? Other proponents for 1087? Hearing none, are there opponents for 1087? Any opponents for House Bill 1087? Hearing none, the public testimony is closed and the matter is referred to the committee for action or discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gillespie.
I'd like to move an amendment. And Ruben has generously provided that to me here. On page 1 of the bill, delete line 5 and insert 23A-20-20, period, if an offense charged is a Class A, comma, Class B, comma, underscore Class C, comma, or Class 1 felony, comma, then, and then continuing and then continuing on to the rest of the bill. And if I could have a moment to explain, Mr. Chairman, if I could get a second.
Second. Motion and second for the amendment. Go ahead, Senator Gillespie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, what this does is it just leaves the Class 1 and adds the Class C so that we remedy the situation where the new Class C felony was brought in with the revision, and we leave the Class 1 felonies as having those 20 peremptories.
If I could clarify then, the bill that was brought actually changed the number of peremptories for the Class 1s, and this would put it back to the way that it was?
Correct, except that it now includes Class C, which was omitted, which I understood to be the purpose of the bill.
Thank you. So we have the amendment in front of us. Any other discussion on the amendment? If not, we'll vote on the amendment. Secretary can call the roll.
Senators Gillespie?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Turbeck Berry?
Aye.
Valley?
No.
Teason?
Aye.
Abdallah?
Aye.
6-1. Other discussion from the committee? As amended.
Yeah.
Thank you. Being no further discussion, we'll vote on House Bill 1087. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, if I might, I'd like to just stay put and briefly address this and products from the Uniform Law Conference, if I could. And then what I would ask of the chair, since this is Senator Knutson's bill, is ask if there's anyone here to testify about the bill, pro or con, and then hold it over in case Senator Knutson has anything he wants to add, or if there's anyone else from the conference who'd like to appear. Is that all right with you, Mr. Chairman? Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, in particular, new members of the committee, this is one of several products you'll see which comes to you by way of the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. That is a group of lawyers. A lot of them are deans of law schools, professors, a lot of legislators. In South Dakota, our delegation includes Senator Knutson, Representative Lust. Who else am I missing? Mike DeMersman was on, Judge O'Brien was on, and now I believe former Speaker Diedrich was elected by the Executive Board. The Uniform Law Conference meets annually in an annual meeting, and then they have drafting committees that meet throughout the year, and they are drafting committees made up of people who have expertise in particular areas of the law. For instance, Article 7 documents of title. I honestly cannot tell you what is in this bill, and I wouldn't make any representations to you that I can. But as an example, lawyers who practice specifically in the area of title would come together and try to get a grasp of emerging trends and ways to modernize laws, particularly laws that they think have a unique application for uniformity. And the most famous product of this conference is the Uniform Commercial Code, the thinking being that the same rules should apply between states for commercial transactions, which makes the system much more efficient, makes the free enterprise system more efficient. I suspect that Senate Bill 89 contains just such an idea in the area of title documents, but I don't know that for certain and would like the chance just to visit with David before the committee acts on it. But I don't see why we couldn't have our hearing and to see if there's anyone else, and then we could drop it below the line in the future until Senator Knutson has a chance to come up and address it.
Committee discussion and or action.
I'll note that we defer action on this until a later date.
There a second?
Second.
We have a motion and second to defer Senate Bill 89 to a later date. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed nay. It will be deferred until a later date, of which we don't have at this time. Any further business for the committee? Seeing none, the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn. We have a motion and second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.